Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Badlands, the show that I've totally forgotten my saying, so I'm going to start this shit again. Jesus Christ, what the fuck? My brain just went... Blah, 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 blah,
I wish I had the restart button.
I did a tolly. I actually did a tolly then. What is a Badlands, Jesus Christ? We'll start again. 3, 2, 1. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Badlands, the only show that is 100% chiseled and is proudly part of the Chairshot Radio Network. I am Mags, and back from his weekly scarf, Mr. Paul Tully, how are you, sir?
I could hear the collected groan as he said back. Everyone thought, Ray's back. Oh, it's Tully.
No, and again, on a serious note, much love to Ray's. Had a rough couple of weeks, a rough Christmas and a rough start to the new year. So hopefully he'll be in better spirits and we'll be back hopefully next week, because we've got a little bit of an announcement at the end of the show for next week's episode. So yeah, but we'll get to that. So Tully, you missed last week's episode, the one about the Ultimate Warrior and whether he would, what would happen if he was a success as world champion. Obviously, you listened back to my diatribe about it. Have you any kind of counter arguments or any points that you think might have been different to the ones I laid out, or just some of the thoughts and ideas that went through your head when thinking about Warrior and his lack of success thereof?
Yeah, well, you did a great job. It was a great listen last week. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Well done for stepping up while I was hunched over the porcelain bowl.
Brilliant. I mean, it was a difficult start to that episode. When the idea for that episode was put forward, I thought this will be a pretty easy topic to cover, but it actually wasn't. To get going with the kind of thought process was a bit of a struggle, but once I got into it and kind of like was following the timeline and the folds in the wrestling business that were happening came to me, it flowed out of me by the end of it. It was I just couldn't stop typing the script. So yeah, it was a very interesting topic to go on, and it actually made me realize that maybe his run, we look at it now as a failure, but maybe it wasn't as big of a failure as it was made out, because the dude still made a hell of a lot of money for the company.
Didn't he, Jess? You raised an excellent point. I mean, you bought the stats out last week.
I did.
Which is impressive. And you made a very good point that perhaps it's only seen as a failure because they told us it was a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many times have we come across that on the show when we believe something that WWE has put out and it's really revisionist history?
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary that we all fall into the trap. Really, we like to think we're old fashioned cynics, but Vince has got us wrapped around his finger.
The closer we are to the business, the easier we are to con.
Exactly. So I found myself agreeing with you that actually it wasn't a failure at all. So actually, what could have changed? But I usually put down my four or five bullet points that I think major things that might have changed. And this really was a might of, because actually the more I heard you talk, the more I thought, well, maybe nothing would have changed at all. So my first one though was, I think if Warrior had become the new Hogan, because I think he did fail in that respect. Mm-hmm. He never reached that height. And I know that's a hell of a target to set someone, but
perhaps impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as possibly no one's done it since, but, mm-hmm. but that the torch was passed to him, and that was the target. And even if it's unfair, that was the target. So if he'd have gone on and been Hogan level, I actually think that first thing I put was that I think the WWF would have gone down a more, they would have embraced the supernatural side more.
Okay.
Because that's somewhere they went with Warrior quite a few times. Against The Undertaker. They did it with Jake the Snake. And they did it with, obviously, famously with Papa Shango. And I think Warrior was built in such a way. I mean, Warrior was probably more unbeatable than Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
The way he'd been booked. And the way his character was, again, you said it in the podcast itself, his matches very, very rarely lasted longer than 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. The Goldberg style.
Goldberg style, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like if he'd have been the champion, they would have carried on doing that supernatural stuff as a way of beating him.
Okay.
Which would have completely changed the product and made it more cartoonish, more cinematic, I guess. But I don't necessarily think that would have been a bad thing. People enjoyed the Undertaker stuff. They enjoyed the Mankind stuff and the Kane stuff years after.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of contained usually around the Undertaker himself. But if that had spread out across more of the roster, I don't know if that would have been. I think it would have been entertaining.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But in terms of how it would affect the product now, I still think WWE and WWF would have embraced the changes as it goes along. So once that kind of the fascination with the supernatural era, I suppose, of WWF waned, we'd still get the new generation and the attitude and ruthless aggression era and stuff like that. So I think it would have changed for that era, a different route to go down. But yes, it certainly would have been entertaining to watch.
Yeah. Then going on to that, I agree with you. I think all of the eras would have happened as they happened. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder if the new generation era might have been pushed back just a little bit.
Okay.
And as we usually like to go down wormholes on here, whether that then, even that say a year of slippage, if that creates a situation where Brett, Sean, or Austin leave in that time.
Mm-hmm. Or in the case of Austin, doesn't come to the WWF at all.
Doesn't come at all, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we'd open up that possibility and what damage that would have done. Mm-hmm. Would be interested to look into. And I think that the the other main one would have been, I think, if Warrior had continued with the same character he had and the same as we say Hogan Mark II. I think the fans, particularly at that, the fans as they were at that time, you know, this is where fandom really changed and became a bit more adult. They clearly would have tired of it,
yeah,
and probably been quite vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
So if Warrior had succeeded, I think there would be a limited period for how long that could genuinely last, because it just wasn't in keeping with where pro wrestling was going. And he didn't have any range. There is nowhere to go as a character.
Yeah, well, once you start going into an area of wrestling where work rate is important, that's where the whole Ultimate Warrior shtick falls flat.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not even necessarily just work rate. Hogan proved he had other places to go. He had Black and White Hogan, he had Yellow and Red Hogan, and they were very different.
Mm-hmm.
Very different characters, very different attitudes. I don't think Warrior would even have that.
He had one.
Yeah.
a xenophobic, conspiracy theory lunatic.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are essentially my thoughts. I eventually led me to, I don't think a lot would have changed at all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the times would have shifted a little bit. Some things might have been delayed. Whether that would eventually impact WWF versus WCW, I doubt it. I doubt it would shift it enough to have impacted that.
Mm-hmm.
The eventuality that WCW would still go out of business and WWF would prosper.
Yep. And I appreciate your input. And yeah, I'm glad we were kind of pretty much on the same page in terms of what the long-term outcome for the company is. This week's topic was picked by me, obviously, because I was on my own. but I went with, what if The Rock never left for Hollywood? So obviously everybody knows The Rock, biggest movie star in the world right now. So as I like to do on the show, I thought I'd give a little bit of a backstory into The Rock and kind of his early career and how he got to the point he's at now. So he had a stint of playing college football for the University of Miami, where he won a national championship, and he looked to be transitioning into being an NFL star, he wasn't drafted. And then he had a short stint in the Canadian Football League. After that, he transitioned into professional wrestling as part of the legendary Anoa'i family, and kind of following in the footsteps of his grandfather Peter Maivia and his dad Rocky Johnson. Debuted in the WWF in 1996 when he went, first of all, by the moniker Flex Cabana. And then when he made his TV debut, he was Rocky Maivia. He was...
Fantastic attire.
It was a fantastic poodle hairstyle as well. And
yep.
He's the only person I know who can rock a turtleneck, a gold chain and a bum bag and still look cool.
You mean fanny pack?
Fanny pack, bum bag to us here on this side of the pond. he was pivotal in the rise for WWE and their popularity during the Attitude Era. He had notable feuds with the McMahons, with Triple H, Mankind, but his biggest feud was his career feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And that kind of... charisma and just fan love that he got was a big part in helping WWE beat WCW the rivals and really break into the mainstream, garnering huge viewer numbers and even bigger profits year on year for the company. But as the WWE pushed into the mainstream, the lights of Hollywood beckoned for The Rock. He obviously has charisma for days, and that made him almost a perfect fit leading man roles in action movies, buddy comedies, and kind of superhero movies. So his first major role was as star of The Scorpion King, which was kind of an offshoot of the Mummy franchise.
He was CGI in that, wasn't he?
In the Mummy Returns, that part was CGI. In his actual kind of real on screen debut, the Scorpion King, he was in the flesh.
Yeah, I assume he was. You'd only CGI because the way the Scorpion King appeared in the Mummy 2 had necessitated it to be CGI. It wasn't like they just wanted his voice or whatever.
No, pretty much. I think the plan was always to have like a spin-off with The Rock as a star, and that was essentially just to get his foot in the door, because he wasn't in the original Mummy film for that long. It's only like a few minutes near the end. But
And Scorpion King was that WWE films?
No,
they were affiliated.
I think they got a producer credit.
Right, okay.
But it was definitely not a WWE Studios produced film. But getting back to The Scorpion King, the movie made 3 times its original budget and opened at number one at the box office across the world. And then after he finally scored a WrestleMania victory over his long-term career rival Stone Cold at WrestleMania 19, he started to spend more and more time in Hollywood and less time in the WWE. And there was a period between 2004 and 2007 where he was pretty much away from the company all the way through that, and was very sporadic in his WWE appearances until he came back for the WrestleMania matches against Cena in 2011 to 2013. And then once that storyline had run its course, he kind of returned back to his sporadic appearance schedule. But in Hollywood, totally different story. After the success of The Scorpion King, he followed that up with The Rundown, with Walking Tall, with Doom, Get Smart, and just dozens and dozens of films with pretty decent to modest success. But he really kind of hit the big time when he landed the role of Hobbs in Fast Five. This role is what propelled The Rock into the high earners of Hollywood. And then Fast and Furious 6 made even more money. And then when we get to Fast 7, that was actually the first $1 billion movie that The Rock was involved in. That led to a spin-off of his own with the Fast Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
I like that one. That was a good one.
I think all of the Fast films with The Rock in have been very, very entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. I find going off track a bit. I find the normal series a little bit far fetched. I know that's the point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Hobbs and Shaw was hilarious. Just such a good film.
It really, really was. It's been around a decade since he actually landed the role of Hobbs in Fast Five, and in that time he's gone on to become the hottest property in Hollywood. Since 2017, he's been in the top five earning highest grossing stars at both the world, domestic and international box office. In 2018 and 2019, he was the number one grossing star for both international and domestic box offices. He's the 16th highest domestic grossing star of all time. He's made $3.3 billion in revenue. And he's also the 15th highest worldwide grossing star with $12.4 billion revenue. He's a behemoth of entertainment.
I don't know why he gave up wrestling. fucking idiot.
In terms of his own pay, he's been the highest paid actor for 3 years straight between 2018 and 2020. He made $124 million in 2018. 89.4 in 2019 and 87.5 million in 2020. He has an estimated fortune of around $320 million. He's got a packed schedule for the next 3 to 4 years for movies. He's got his own production company with 7 books. He's a part owner of the Voss Water Company. He part owns Terramana Tequila. He part owns the XFL. He's got a sponsorship deal worth millions with Under Armour. And he's on target to be a genuine billionaire within the next 5 years. Just wow. Absolutely unreal. And there's even the long-standing rumors that he's got his eye on being president of the United States, which is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
That'd be the cherry on the cake, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. What a rags to riches story, though. Coming down to Florida with essentially $7 in his pocket to now being worth $320 million, being the most recognizable movie star in the world, and every project you're involved with is a massive home run. It's inspirational. There's no other way to describe it.
It's incredible. He's an incredible human being. And he's a demigod, isn't he? Because he was Maui as well, which was his finest performance, or certainly the one I've seen
what
most.
What can I say except you're welcome? That is a brilliant performance. You're absolutely right. So the plan for this episode is, what if that Hollywood journey didn't happen for The Rock? What if he stuck around in WWE? How would wrestling the landscape of wrestling change? How would his career go? Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
You did a lot of work last week, didn't I? Shall I let you sit back and then have you got a book in for us this week?
I've got a timeline. You know how I book now. I essentially book week to week, month to month. Well, for this, I've actually gone year to year.
Okay.
So I'm happy to go first if you'd like to hear what I've got planned for The Rock.
All right. Let's hear your booking. I've done the usual. I've got my
scattergram
with my 5 or 6 points that I think most important things that might have happened, and we'll see if any of mine pop up correlate with yours.
Okay, so for context, in my storyline, the Scorpion King still happens, the WrestleMania 19 match still happens, and The Rock does have a less intense schedule if you compare it to his heyday in the Attitude Era. And I've actually got to give a lot of props to someone over on Reddit called Rushy O'Mill, who kind of laid the groundwork for the way I've booked this. So yeah, props to that guy. But yep, I'm going to start with 2003. 2003, 2004, because these go essentially from WrestleMania to WrestleMania. So we've no need to take time away to film Walking Tall. I don't think The Rock leaves after he loses at Backlash to Goldberg. Instead, he gets inserted into the continuing feud between Triple H and Booker T. If you remember that whole kind of "you people are never champion" bullshit that happened at WrestleMania 19.
Who could forget?
Yeah, exactly. So I have Booker and The Rock trading the title in the lead up to SummerSlam, and then it's there where the Goldberg loss at Backlash returns to bite him as Bill Goldberg defeats The Rock for the World Heavyweight title. And then after spending a few months unsuccessfully challenging Goldberg to win the strap back, he transitions into a WrestleMania 20 feud with Shawn Michaels. After Shawn Michaels was the third man for the Rock and Sock match against Evolution at No Way Out 2004. If you remember, that was a 2-on-3 encounter. But Shawn Michaels is added to that match, and then there's shenanigans and blame attributed to why The Rock and Sock weren't able to get the victory. That leads to The Rock and Shawn Michaels facing off, and they absolutely steal the show at WrestleMania with The Rock going over. So then we're going to 2004-2005, and this WrestleMania rematch with HBK happens at Backlash. Shawn Michaels gets his win back, and this is...
I just interject quickly.
Okay.
Did Rock and Shawn Michaels ever have a match?
I don't think that they ever had a singles match. I remember...
I can't recall one.
I remember listening to a Shawn Michaels interview where he said one of his biggest regrets was that he didn't have a program with The Rock. So yeah, it's a massive misstep.
Absolutely, wow.
Yeah, so Shawn Michaels gets his win back at Backlash, and this is the first time we see Rock take a sustained period away from the WWE. But he's back for SummerSlam, and he's involved in a huge triple threat dream match with Triple H and Shawn Michaels for the World Heavyweight title. The Rock wins, he's victorious, capitalizing on the tension between the former DX partners, and this makes him an 11-time world champion. That number will be significant once we get towards the tail end of my booking. But after winning the title, he sees off Triple H in the fallout, and then we see a new contender rise from the ashes, one Randy Orton, the protege of Triple H. And Orton shocks the world when he beats The Rock for the title at Survivor Series, which then leads up to what happened in real life, the betrayal from Triple H, the breakup of Evolution, and then we get a triple threat between Orton, Trips, and the Royal Rumble winner, Batista. Batista leaves SmackDown to be part of that triple threat match, because if you remember in the original timeline, Batista won the Royal Rumble, the whole kind of the John Cena and Vince McMahon's quads exploding Royal Rumble finish. Well, Batista won the Rumble, and Triple H was trying to convince him to go to SmackDown. And not face Triple H on Raw. But Batista does go to be part of that triple threat match, which means there's a big gap on SmackDown, which leads Teddy Long, who's the general manager, to introduce the biggest acquisition in SmackDown history, none other than the great one, The Rock. But the fans don't take to this version of The Rock. He comes in very cocky, very arrogant, with the whole, this is my show, The Rock show, SmackDown, you guys should essentially bow to my feet. But in an attempt to kind of curry the favour of this fan base, The Rock teams up with Cena and Undertaker to defeat JBL and his cabinet. But he's still booed by the fans. And in a fit of anger and a fit of retaliation, The Rock hits Undertaker with a huge rock bottom, which builds to a WrestleMania 21 showdown with the Dead Man.
Ooh.
Yeah. And as WrestleMania then, I think WrestleMania 21 was the WrestleMania goes Hollywood. We see Undertaker standing tall, and he's beat The Rock to continue the streak. I think the streak at that time was 12-0. So yeah, The Rock, he's defeated at WrestleMania. So getting to 2005-2006, The Rock is tormented by that loss, tormented by the ever booing fans. So he looks at SmackDown's biggest babyface at the time, Eddie Guerrero, and he challenges Eddie Guerrero, and he loses to Eddie at Great American Bash. The Rock ends up getting his win back to become number one contender for John Cena's WWE title. Cena wins that match, and then he goes on to challenge John Cena at SummerSlam, where he wins his 12th world title. He has successful defenses with Eddie coming back for for a rematch. Cena wanting a rematch. Rey, Mysterio, and Undertaker. And we see The Rock actually have a sustained run with a title all the way to WrestleMania 22, where Royal Rumble winner Kurt Angle challenges The Rock for the title, and he beats him at WrestleMania 22. Oof, this is interesting so far. So
Rock did a lot of losing.
He does at WrestleMania specifically.
Didn't notice that.
Yeah, so going into 2006 and 2007, we get a WrestleMania rematch at Judgment Day. Kurt retains, and The Rock takes another break away from the ring, considering he had an eight-month run with the title. I think it's pretty well-deserved. And you don't actually see The Rock for the majority of 2006, but he returns to a very special pay-per-view, one where he made his debut a decade earlier. This time he's part of Team Angle in their Survivor Series victory over Team Booker. And The Rock ends 2006 with a win at Armageddon against Booker, and then starts 2007 with a hot streak when he wins his second ever Royal Rumble. And then instantly he declares that he wants to face the WWE champion, who at the time was John Cena. We get to WrestleMania, and we have Cena versus The Rock again. And this time the Rock comes out, finally gets his win at WrestleMania, finally wins the world title on the Big Show when he beats Cena for that belt. So then going into 2007-2008, the Rock Cena feud carries on through Backlash and through Judgment Day, with The Rock coming out on top. But after his win against Cena at Judgment Day, he doesn't actually leave that pay-per-view as champion, because once he beat the Doctor of Fugonomics, a tired, aching, sore Rock is dethroned by the ultimate opportunist, Edge, who cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase and strips The Rock of his WWE title. This leads to another break from the ring for The Rock. This one not as long, though. He's back for the draft lottery in 2007, where he's drafted to Raw. And his first major feud on Raw is with his cousin, Umaga. And he beats Umaga at No Mercy, and he beats him at Cyber Sunday. And then challenges World Heavyweight Champion Randy Orton for the title at Survivor Series. And we get a lot of kind of callbacks to Survivor Series from a decade earlier. I mean, if you remember the year before, we spoke about how it was an important show for The Rock, because he made his debut at Survivor Series in 1996. But something even more pivotal for the wrestling business happened at Survivor Series 1997. That was the Montreal Screwjob. So in homage to that, we almost see a reversal of the Montreal Screwjob when William Regal and Vince stop the timekeeper from ringing the bell just as Randy Orton is tapping out to the sharpshooter. The Miami crowd are fuming that their hometown hero has been screwed by Vince. So then on the Raw after Survivor Series, we see Orton take The Rock out, and he goes again on another break, but we don't see him till the Rumble, when he comes back and beats Orton for that World Heavyweight title. And on that same night, we see a return from a long-term injury for one John Cena, who comes back and miraculously wins the Royal Rumble, potentially setting up a rematch at WrestleMania with The Rock. So we get to No Way Out. The Rock has to defend his title in the Elimination Chamber. And after a hard-fought defense, The Rock versus Cena 2 is confirmed for WrestleMania. So we get that once-in-a-lifetime match again. So we again get some more homage to things that have happened in the past. If you remember the last time The Rock faced somebody in a WrestleMania rematch, that was against Stone Cold. Vince got involved in that match. He gets involved in this match. He comes to the ring and offers The Rock a chair to lay waste to John Cena. The Rock refuses the chair. And whilst he's refusing it, Cena hits him with a low blow, takes the chair, and lays absolute waste to The Rock. He's fell for the same thing again. He's hit with an FU and pinned by John Cena. And in a very eerie repeat of 2001, the biggest face in the company has made a deal with the devil to defeat The Rock.
You've turned him.
I have. I've turned Cena.
Oh, that's bold.
I had to do it. So we get to 2008-2009. The Rock has another breakaway. And we see Cena and Orton running roughshod over Raw as essentially a modern-day power trip under the leadership of McMahon. But Rock returns at SummerSlam to get revenge on John Cena, who is still champion. But unfortunately for The Rock, he's unsuccessful. And once this feud's done, we actually see Rock spend a little bit of time out of the title picture, because every time he's returned, he's quickly pushed back into the main event. We see him reuniting with Mick Foley. And he and Mick, as part of the Rock and Sock connection, start to take on more members of this ever-growing Power Trip faction. So at Unforgiven, we see them beat Cody and Ted DiBiase's legacy. And then post-match, we have Orton coming out to help Cody and DiBiase beat down on the two veterans. This leads to a Power Trip versus Team Raw match on Survivor Series. The Power Trip win very, very easily. Randy Orton is the MVP of the match. Really has a standout performance. And then we cut to Cena and Vince looking on in concern as they see Randy Orton standing tall, almost in a kind of what monster have we created style. So Orton goes on to win the Rumble. The Rock gets eliminated by Edge, which kickstarts a feud between them two. So we have Edge taking on The Rock in a feud. And after narrowly escaping No Way Out with the WWE title by the skin of his teeth, we see Edge is booked to face the Great One at WrestleMania. And he's able to beat the Rated R Superstar despite interference from Eddie Guerrero. And he ends WrestleMania again as a WWE champion. So 2009-2010 comes around. And with the victory over Edge, that makes The Rock now a 15-time world champion. He's getting there, exactly. He retains against Edge at Backlash, retains against Edge at No Way Out, and that feud is then pretty much wrapped up. He looks to his next challenger, and that man is one Jeff Hardy. But Edge and Vicky Guerrero will not be pushed into the shadows, and as SmackDown GM, Vicky inserts her husband into the match at Extreme Rules, which makes it a triple threat. The Rock is able to retain. And then at the Great American Bash, Jeff Hardy finally gets his one-on-one single match against the champ. He doesn't waste that opportunity, and he beats The Rock to become a champion. But kind of like The Rock earlier in the storyline, his joy is very short-lived, because the Money in the Bank holder cashes in to capitalize on a weakened Jeff Hardy. And that Money in the Bank holder is one Chicago-made Punk.
Oh, CM Punk.
So The Rock,
I wonder when he show his face.
Exactly. And I left this to the end because I knew it would pop you. Popping the boys. So we see The Rock take another sabbatical, but comes back to win the Royal Rumble again. And he takes that win to get himself an opportunity against CM Punk in the main event of WrestleMania 26. And in that process, he erases a lot of issues that Punk actually had with the WWE, because Punk is getting his WrestleMania main event. The Rock isn't stealing his spot. He's not being pushed down the card.
Has he still got a staph infection?
he gets multiple Z-packs instead of just one. He gets multiple. but after a brutal battle, CM Punk is defeated by The Rock, which makes him equals Ric Flair's 16-time world champion record. The Nature Boy's music hits. He comes to the ring, a stare down, and then the Nature Boy raises the hand of the Great One as he hands him the title, as they now share the record for the most amount of world titles. End scene.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
That's the end.
That's where I've left it, on that cliffhanger, because I think that's a cool, happy moment to leave it on.
Oh, you've gone soft. We don't leave it on happy moments here. Oh, that was wonderful. I like that. It's a lot of callbacks, a lot of repeating themes, a lot of linkages all the way through. You've thought about that one, haven't you?
Yeah, and like I said, props to Russia Emil on Reddit, because and definitely go on and check it out. He or she, I don't actually know the person, but they laid a lot of groundwork for me to pour over and kind of manipulate into a cohesive story. So yeah, props to them. But yeah, I had a lot of fun booking this. A lot of fun. Yeah, now time to tear it apart.
Well, there's a lot of repeated themes in what I think would have happened. And as I say, I love that booking, and I think I've got ways it would differ, and which I go through. But actually, yeah, the general theme is pretty much the same. So, should I take you through it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do it.
Number one. Rock sets the world record for number of world titles won.
Wow.
There it is.
That's eerie how kind of on the same page we end up being.
Isn't it? But it seems like thank you. It seems like a no-brainer, because he won 10, didn't he?
Yeah,
in his time, I know some of them were. Well, at least one of them was in the later period when he came back. And as we discussed so many times on the original Badlands, because The Rock came up so many times because he was in our top four at the end. His official number of matches at 852. Mm-hmm. As we kept saying, everyone else at the top of that Rushmore were double that
Yeah,
maybe more. I mean, so he wanted
with Ric Flair, it was like five times that amount.
So he won 10 championships in that amount of time, and I can't remember how many years he was fully active, but it wasn't long, was it?
It was from 96 to around 2003, so yeah. 7 years essentially. I know exactly. He won the title a couple of times in his like off period, but yeah, he had essentially a 7 year career.
Yeah, so it stands to reason that he would definitely achieve that if, even if, like in your booking, he worked not part time, but he took breaks. Even if he took breaks over that period, he would set that record, I think. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I don't think Cena, Orton, and Triple H would have as many because okay. if someone else has got the title more, then they're going to have less, aren't they? So I think we'd have a situation where the Rock is hunting down that Ric Flair record, and again, it stands to reason, as you did in yours, that there would be some kind of meeting of the two, whether it's a passing of the torch or whether they attempted a match.
Flair versus the Rock. You've headlined Starcade after Starcade after Starcade. Why not headline one more Starcade with the Rock?
So I think that's number one. That would definitely happen. And I don't think anyone would have any complaints about that, really.
No, I agree.
I think they'd have less complaints about Cena equaling the record than they had about Cena equaling the record. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that goes on to alluding to that there, where I said it would probably affect the number of title reigns Cena, Orton, and Triple H would have. Number two, SmackDown was the Rock show. So I differ to you in some ways. I think he would always be drafted to SmackDown. Similar to Cena was always drafted to SmackDown, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which again will fit into something I say later. But yeah, I think he would be pretty much SmackDown devoted. The show was, well, I don't know if the show wasn't created for him, but in kind of kayfabe it was, wasn't it? And he was named after SmackDown, was kind of his saying, wasn't it? So I think he would always be a SmackDown wrestler. Now I think the effect that would have, and again I differ to yours here somewhere, if the Rock's in there, someone else needs to drop out, and looking at it, I think logically JBL doesn't happen.
Okay.
As I say, logically, if you've got one extra person in there, one extra person has to drop out. You can't have an unlimited roster of top stars.
And the thing with JBL was that they were the stars that were on SmackDown weren't ready for that spot. So JBL was essentially the ultimate transition champion. I think he did an underrated job as SmackDown champion. But you're right, if the Rock's there, perhaps there's no need for JBL to be that transition.
No, he was fantastic, and mm-hmm. I don't know the full details. Again, it's kind of a period I was kind of half watching at that point. It feels to me like he was probably never intended to be champion as long as he was. He just took the ball and run with it, as they say.
Yeah,
and he was brilliant, and he deserved what he got.
Yeah, the making of it was the Eddie Guerrero feud, I think.
Yeah.
That's what proved that JBL was able to carry the brand.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely nothing against him at all. I just think someone drops out, so it's him. Mm-hmm. And obviously, JBL famously a heel. I agree with your booking. I think we see a mega The Rock heel run. So kind of towards the end of his first run with WWE, the fans were actually starting to turn on him anyway.
Yeah. And that was one of the hardest parts to to book, I suppose, because as much as everybody loves The Rock, a sustained face Rock can get pretty boring pretty quickly because whilst his catchphrases are funny, if you're hearing them week on week, they get tedious. So he needs to go away and then come back, and we get like a revisiting of the greatest hits, but he leaves before it kind of outstays his welcome. That was difficult to get around. So I feel the turns needed to happen to keep him fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a great heel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not much different to him as a face. It's the same kind of a catchphrase and the same kind of attitude. It's just that his vitriol is aimed at the fans rather than aimed at his opponent.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was always a fantastic heel when he was a heel. And there's something about when you're that entertaining, if you deliberately deprive the fans of being entertaining, then there's something like really nasty and bad guy about that, isn't it? You know, I could have you all laughing, I could have you all cheering, but I'm not going to give you the satisfaction.
Yeah, I mean, how many times did he start singing and then said, "Whoa, this ain't sing along with the champ," or
exactly.
that kind of thing? So yeah, you make a really good point there.
So yeah, I think he'd have a big heel run. He'd be in that replacing JBL there. Yeah, because like I say, after the match with Hogan, people were the fans were starting to turn on him anyway. And I didn't know this, but I read it that actually after the Lesnar match, he tried to do a kind of a goodbye speech or something, and he got booed.
At SummerSlam 2002. Yeah. Was it 2002? Yeah, I think it was 2002. Yeah. They booed him out of the building. Yeah.
Yeah. So, which is mind-blowing. I don't know how I missed that at the time. I wasn't kind of reading websites and stuff back then, so I just didn't know that had happened. So, again, revisionist history, Rock was always super popular, but he wasn't. So I think that the heel turn was there. And I think maybe they could, and again, correct me if the timelines are all shonky and wrong here, maybe he could have revisited. He could have, he almost do a bloodline storyline 20 years earlier. With, obviously, we know Rikishi ran over Austin for The Rock. Maybe all along he did. And Rock did ask him to do it.
Maybe. Yeah.
And they could revisit that massive heel turn. You said Umaga wasn't long from coming up. So he could have been part of it.
Yep.
There's an idea there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's meat on the bone now for that bloodline thing, though, with Roman and with the Usos and The Rock coming back. There's a storyline there waiting to be played with Roman thinking he's the head of the table, then The Rock coming in saying, "Listen, I laid the groundwork for this. I'm the head of the table. You acknowledge me." Yep. So yeah, that could have easily worked 10 years ago.
Definitely. I mean, as you say, it's there to happen, whether it will or not. It, I guess, depends if he gets a gap in his diary big enough to do it.
And if they're willing to pay.
Exactly. Based on the figures you were quoting earlier, I don't think they can.
Yeah, I was I used to use a website called Box Office Mojo for stuff like that, for numbers that movies made, but I think they've been bought out by IMDb, so it's all kind of behind a paywall. So I actually found another website, and looking at the numbers of how much money his films have made, it was staggering. I mean, $12.4 billion over his career in revenue for his movies. Just,
it's amazing, isn't it?
It's an obscene amount of money.
Because one of the things I did here on one of my spider legs was, I was wondering how would. And I haven't got a point on it because I didn't get anywhere with it. But how would Hollywood have changed if Rock hadn't been there? And I was looking down the list of films, and there's nothing really there that he makes all this money, but there's nothing amazing there, is there? I mean, Fast and Furious is great, but he came in late. It was already a great franchise.
He's never going to get an Oscar, is he?
No,
he's a comedy slash action star. So I'm sure somebody else would have filled those roles if The Rock wasn't there to take them. They may have not made as much money, but I'm sure Hollywood is a way bigger machine than the WWE ever will be. That's what WWE are aspiring to be. So I'm sure that Hollywood wouldn't have felt that much change if The Rock didn't turn up. Austin may have took some of those roles. Jason Momoa may have had a bigger career if it wasn't for him being a wish version of The Rock.
Yeah.
poor Jason Momoa. That was horrible. Sorry, yeah. Jason.
He's been dealt a bad hand, though, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. right. Okay. So next one, again, kind of it pulls something out. Pull something out that you you booked yourself. When I think about The Rock, I think this sounds a bit weird because he did have what was at the time a massive feud with Austin, mm-hmm. but I still feel like he didn't have a career defining feud.
Okay,
because Austin's was McMahon. I feel like Rock doesn't really have one. When I think of him, I just think of him as The Rock. I don't think, remember all those battles he had with X.
Yeah, for me, I get what you're saying. The matches with Austin were important to The Rock's career, but not as important to Austin's career. His feud with McMahon was way more important. So it's almost like The Rock is the sad piece of Austin, would you say? But if you're looking away from Austin, I think it's Triple H. I think Triple H is his career feud.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to get. I think those two were destined to be wrapped together for their entire career. So for all of that, all of the 2000s, I think you would have just constantly got Rock and Triple H. And it's a shame we didn't. It's a shame their feud didn't really go to the heights it should have done because The Rock left.
Yeah, and ironically, that would mean he's just been Triple H's side piece as well, because I always link Triple H to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah,
I mean they were like the best of friends, the worst of enemies throughout their career. So yeah, The Rock is stuck in that kind of middle place where he's always the bridesmaid.
Yeah, that's right. But I think then he would have gone on, and I think his career feud would have been Cena. Mm-hmm. As I said, they both in my timeline, they both would have been SmackDown the majority of their career, so they would have been clashing a lot. I would have had Rock as a heel, and Cena eventually becomes the super face. But again, as your booking showed, they could easily switch that round as well to freshen it up, like similar to what they've done with Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns recently. I think we saw from the once in a lifetime and then again matches that their chemistry was fantastic, and they intermittently they did string that feud out for 2 years, so it was a long feud. It had flashpoints rather than being constant. They could have run for years and years, and I actually think Rock and Cena would have been a feud for the ages.
Yeah, and someone else who I tried to kind of book into man, but it I didn't want to go too far away from the original timeline. I wanted to keep as much of that in as possible. But someone who I really wanted to kind of push into that storyline, and it just didn't work every time I attempted it, was Kurt Angle. Because I feel that he's someone who, whilst he's an amazing talent, he's never really had a career feud in WWE.
No, didn't.
So I think he would have been a perfect foil for The Rock. But like I said, it didn't make sense whenever I tried to kind of push Kurt Angle into the storyline too much.
No, but they were feuding quite a bit around the time of the invasion, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we talked about that recently. Why did Kurt leave WWF?
So he got an addiction to painkillers. He obviously had his broken neck, and he didn't want to take time away to get it fixed. So he relied on painkillers. He asked the WWE to be released from his contract to get better. And then a couple of months later, turned up on TNA. still massively addicted to painkillers. I think he spoke about it on his the Kurt Angle podcast with Conrad Thompson, saying that when he went to TNA, whilst he had a great career there, he was fucked up. He was massively addicted to painkillers, and they didn't have the structure in TNA that they had in WWE, where they can spot the triggers, or they can see when people are really struggling. So he just carried on for years, just taking painkiller after painkiller after painkiller, and essentially wrecking his career.
Yeah.
Which is a damn shame.
It is a damn shame. And I guess we're lucky he's still with us, as morbid as that sounds. The reason I asked that was I wondered if they had linked him to The Rock, and kind of that became a Kurt Angle career feud, if you like. Wonder if that would have changed his mind on leaving, and actually Kurt would have stayed around for a long time.
Yeah, and I think I don't think Kurt had a particular career feud. If anyone, he probably had his best storyline with Brock, I think. That was a really good storyline. But yeah, he was someone who he was like a chameleon. I think of Kurt Angle, like you could fit him in a feud with anyone, and it just worked because of how good he was. But yeah, it would have been cool to see him have a feud where they just were inextricably linked together throughout the career, and it would have been cool for The Rock, but it is what it is.
Yep. Okay, next one we've got. So if Rock and Cena are feuding throughout the 2000s, you don't get the once in a lifetime moment that WrestleMania and that was the biggest selling WrestleMania or biggest selling pay-per-view of all time. I believe it still is, and in my opinion it's the last mega WrestleMania main event. I can't think of anything else that, I mean, there's that and there's Rock and Hogan in terms of those icon versus icon matches.
Okay.
Can you think of any others that?
Matches for The Rock specifically or?
No, just massive massive WrestleMania that cross over. Okay. Because Cena Rock is the biggest selling pay per view of all time because it crossed over, and
because they were both essentially movie stars.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think in terms of the wrestling bubble, Brock versus Roman is huge, but outside of Brock's kind of crossover to UFC, and we've got a burgeoning, I suppose, Roman crossover with mainstream. But yeah, it's nowhere near the level of Rock versus Cena.
No. Well, look at the one everyone's clamoring for is Roman versus Rock, which is mad. So
and now Brock versus Lashley.
Yeah. Yeah. So where was I going? Right. So it's quite difficult with this one because it might be an element of confirmation bias, because this is where I came back into watching WWE. But I feel like there was a resurgence of people, lapsed fans, coming back to WWE round about that time and round about the CM Punk time. And those two things kind of went hand in hand together, which I think then played a part in that being the biggest selling pay-per-view of all time.
Okay.
So if Rock's around just full time and he's feuding with Cena, obviously that never happens. And I just don't think you don't get that 2010, 2011 bit of resurgence there with the lapsed fans coming back. I don't know what effect that has long term, but I think it'd be an interesting quirk. And then you mentioned it to pop me, is the CM Punk issue. Is if Rock stayed, if the once in a lifetime stuff doesn't happen, then as you say, CM Punk probably gets his WrestleMania main event. And he's a much happier guy, and perhaps he does stick around. That's a whole new timeline. That's a whole new timeline again.
The issue I had with it, I mean, like I said, I put him in there because I knew it would absolutely pop you, being the punk mark that you are. But his whole kind of character for his last real run in WWE was built around him not getting his dues, him being passed over. And if he's involved in the main events, do we get that edginess? I mean, he was always edgy, don't get me wrong, but do we get that WWE career defining edginess that we get with Punk? I mean, it's
we don't get his defining moment.
Yeah. And his edginess is what is carrying him now through AEW. He's whether he likes it or not, his popularity is based on how he feels he was in the WWE. And that's kind of the big part of his character in AEW. Do we get that? Because he's got his flowers, he's got his WrestleMania moment, he's got his collector cups, he's got his ice cream bars, he's had his multiple time world titles. Do we have that pissed off, mad at the world, mad at the system Punk? I don't know if that happens.
God, now ain't that interesting?
Mm.
That is.
But and then without that kind of that attitude and that the fan swell behind him, does he become the star that he became?
So you lose the once in a lifetime pay per view, mm-hmm. and you lose the CM Punk that we came to know and love or hate, if depending on what you think of him. That's a big loss to that period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All because the selfish Rock wouldn't piss off to Hollywood and leave a gap in the company for CM Punk to take in.
we could go on for ages about that one.
Mm-hmm.
Right, my final one. Again, bit of a stretch here, but I could see this happening. I think he would now be in a senior role at WWE. Akin to Triple H's role. Reason I think that, well, he's clearly a very talented man, very creative. But the reason I think it is, he's in the things he does, he's very like Vince McMahon, and you can see it him. So you know, he's gone now into like having his own movie studio, kind of. I don't know what the correct word is for it, but
he's got a production company called Seven Books
Production Company. That's what I look for. So he's got his production company. He wants to move into that, and obviously he's produced films with WWE as well. The Page one, mm-hmm. Fighting with My Family. So he's worked with WWE on that. Then you've also got, he bought the XFL off Vince McMahon.
He did.
So he clearly has the same kind of ideas as Vince,
and a lot of what Vince has rubbed off on him, the kind of the business ethics, maybe the business kind of mindset where he wants to diversify his revenue streams. Yeah, I think you're absolutely on the money there. He's very much wants to be an entertainment mogul like Vince is.
So I think he would be in a leadership position at WWE, and I think WWE would be a hell of a lot better off for it. because I think, well, it I don't think it's even a leap, but this is clear. He gets it. He gets the entertainment side more than Vince. Mm-hmm. He gets the mainstream side more than Vince. He targets it in the same way, but he's better at it. So if he was with Vince, they'd be, and then with Triple H's mind for the wrestling, it'd just be incredible.
And this is just spitballing from that, because I didn't even take any of that into context with Rock's man for the business and his mainstream appeal. Add that to Triple H's finger on the pulse of that, the indie talent and the way that the wrestling business is going. There's no need for a Vince to be there. Vince could have easily passed the baton on. If as you say, The Rock goes backstage and ends up kind of rising through the ranks of the company, a Triple H and Rock led WWE becomes huge, because they've got all of the bases covered, and the one thing that they don't have is an out of touch owner who essentially books for an audience of one. They've got people who know the business but also know how to entertain. Yeah, that would be an outstanding way for WWE to go. That's brilliant. That's I'm genuinely blown away with that. You've shot me, Paul.
There you go. I've drawn a line. That's it. That's the last bullet point.
Mic drop, kaboom. Well, that's really astute. I didn't even remotely contemplate like the thoughts of Rock going backstage and kind of like having that impact. But yeah, it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
It would.
Now, whether Vince would kind of loosen those apron strings is another shout, but in that timeline, he did. Yeah, there'd be no stopping WWE. Absolutely no stopping him.
It'd be so much bigger than it is now. And it's massive now.
and it'd be more popular as well. They wouldn't maybe be that kind of that online hate for WWE as we see a lot. There's a lot of kind of anti-WWE rhetoric with Rock in charge, knowing what the fans want and essentially giving the fans what they want. Yeah, that goes away. There's no AEW. There's no need for an AEW.
No. There you go. We come back to episode one.
Every episode leads to us closing AEW down there or just wiping them from existence. That's the whole aim of Badlands. It's just to wipe all Elite Wrestling off the face of the earth. Kenny doesn't leave New Japan. He stays in there forever. The book's there. Cody doesn't leave because he's obviously been in a feud with The Rock, so he's happy. Yeah, there's no AEW. There's no need for an AEW.
That's our conclusion. Series over. What's the next one?
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
That's a great segue, because the next topic is your choice. But before that, we've got a bit of a scoop for the listeners. Next week, we're going to actually have a special guest. And hopefully as well, Mr. Ray Cash will be feeling up to being on the show. He's obviously let us know that he wouldn't want to miss this one for the world. But yeah, we're having one of our very, very good buddies in this wrestling community that we're in. And someone who better come back to podcasting very, very quickly, because I miss the show that they put out. We're having one Clav from the Ricky and Clav show on next week.
This is brilliant. This makes me very, very happy.
Mm-hmm. Same. Absolutely the same.
I can't wait to have him here. I just can't wait. It's like Christmas again.
So, Paul, the pressure is on you now to come up with a topic befitting the royalty that is Sir Clavert.
Hold on, give it a pause there. I think something's happened. Sorry about that. Nothing to worry about.
Paul, sorry to bother you, but the house is burning down.
I thought it was there. I did a COVID test right before I came on because I didn't want to give it to you.
You didn't want to give me COVID over the airwaves.
And she had it in her hand, so I just genuinely assumed it was positive then.
Oh, scenes if Mel comes in and she's drawn the second line. That would have been amazing. And you just absolutely panicking as you try and come up with a topic for Clive. That would have been brilliant.
It wouldn't surprise me if she did that. She's not happy. She's not happy. I have to go back to work tomorrow.
Oh.
Because she doesn't think it's safe.
She was sat there when Boris did his 5 o'clock announcement going, COVID restrictions. COVID restrictions. No, Boris, no.
Right, better get back on topic. Sorry about that.
It's bad.
So you just told me to pick the topic, didn't you?
Yeah. So essentially, Clara is coming onto the show. You have the honour of giving him a topic worthy of his lordship, Clav.
Okay. Well, there could be only one topic area for Clive, can't they? He's famously a huge fan of 205 Live. He earned himself the moniker of 205 Clive.
Yeah.
So how could we not pick something aligned to that?
I think he will. There's two distinct outcomes for this. He'll embrace it and think, yes, these guys know me and this is right down my alley. Or he'll go, for fuck's sake, I didn't really like 205 in the first place. Why do I keep being lumbered with it?
Right, so here it is. What if WWE had thrown the world behind 205 Live? What if they'd given it, you know, given it the impetus it needed to succeed? What if they'd made a big deal of it? What if they'd, yeah, given it the love that Clive clearly believed it deserved?
Clive and only Clive believed that. So I think that's a great topic. A lot of kind of pathways we can go down. What if WWE had put the machine behind 205 Live and really kind of pushed it rather than it be hid away on the network and kind of the redheaded stepchild to SmackDown, essentially.
Yeah, see, you know, the same sort of weight they put behind NXT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's a great topic, and I'm sure Clav will love revisiting 205 Live with a tear in his eye. But yeah, so definitely tune into that next week. So yeah, it'll be a bumper episode next week with four kind of minds for the wrestling business going at this this 205 conundrum. But yep, that's all from us for this week. So, Mr. Tolle, time for your favourite part of the week.
My favourite part, where I get to thank everybody for listening.
No, where you get to just sign off and then go and don't have to talk to me again for over 7 days.
I look forward to this every week. And then this week especially after not being able to be here last week. But no, generally, thank you for listening.
Brilliant.
That's the first one I've cocked up.
That's stealing. let me get a timestamp. So 1:21. Fuck up. You've lost it. This is going to take about 10 minutes now, isn't it?
This is what happens. I haven't got the skill of just going back in as if it's in mid conversation.
It's a good job one of us knows how to edit.
It is, isn't it? Well, we've just got time to say thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, what we love most of all is chatting through your ideas about our what ifs and our scenarios and getting your thoughts. Best part of recording this podcast for me. Here's where you can do that. You can follow us at Badlands Pod on Twitter. You can follow Magsy there over at Podfather Mags also on Twitter, and you can follow me at Rain Counter on Twitter, and give us a follow and let us know what you thought of Mags's booking and my scenario this week. And any of your own ideas. You can hear our what ifs every single Thursday. Best way to make sure you get your hands on or your ears on those are by going to your podcast provider of choice. You can catch our what ifs every single Thursday. Best way you can get those is by going to your podcast provider of choice and subscribing to Chairshot Radio Network on there. And as I say, it'll drop every Thursday. Finally, if you head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/ the Chairshot, you can find all sorts of lovely merch and goodies over there. Go check out, go support the podcast, go support the network. It would be much appreciated. We look forward to speaking to you next week. Hope you can join us. Until then, stay safe and always use your head.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.